Thank you, Lucas.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to BU in the Morning. Today, we are joined by two very special guests. We have Eden May Stevenson, producer and host on WCRB, as well as Brian McCreath, who is the director of production for GBH Music. Thank you both so much for coming on the show. We're so excited to have you.
It's great to be here. Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is our first interview with fellow radio people, same background in radio. We're very excited.
we're amongst friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very excited to get your perspective and experience working in public radio professionally. But if you both wouldn't mind starting off, maybe introducing yourselves and telling us a little bit more about your role at GBH and WCRB.
Sure. So I'm Brian, and I have been at GBH for about 20 years now. And my professional background before coming to GBH was mostly in music. I'm a trumpet player, and I did a master's at NEC, right over on the other side of the fence. And so I played professionally for a long time. And while I was playing professionally, I was often turning on the radio, driving from gig to gig. And I would turn on classical radio stations and think, why don't they sound as excited about classical music as I feel like I am about classical music? And that kind of just led to a whole process of sort of seeing how people talk about classical music and what people value in classical music. And I found those discussions really fascinating and really engaging. And it just kind of led me to think, well, radio is a place where you can do this. You can talk to people about music. And when I found out this statistic that most people actually encounter classical music first on the radio, the first time people hear classical music in their lives is usually on the radio, I just kind of felt like, why don't I start to look into that, see what that's like? Anyway, I came to GBH and initially just kind of tried to get my skills around me as a production assistant, and eventually that led to some on-air hosting. And now what I do is director of production, which means that I coordinate a lot of our radio and studio productions. And I'm also the producer and host of our Boston Symphony broadcasts and another show that is exclusively about Bach. So it sort of turned into a reality of partly being on the air and being that mediator between the music and the audience, and partly being on the scene behind the curtain, sort of organizing and curating productions. So that's where I'm coming from. Eden May?
Well, I host middays Monday through Friday at WCRB, and I also do a little production on the side. But I actually got started in student radio. I come from a musical background. I played the cello, and in school I was studying cello as well, and got into classical radio in college. And I think that it's a really great place to experiment and sort of chase your curiosity. So I hope you guys are doing a little bit of that while you're here, because it's a really great playground, I think. But yeah, I loved it. I wanted to keep doing it. And I was really interested, like Brian, in conversations about classical music and reading and writing about classical music. And so I interned at WCRB while I was still a student. We don't do internships anymore, but I recommend interning at GBH. It's a great place to be. And after that, I finished school and came back and started as a sub-host. And when the middays opened up, I got my foot in there. So I've been there about 3 years now. Yeah.
Nice. Thank you so much for sharing. I think it's really interesting that both of you have such a solid background in music and playing instruments. Do you think that has impacted how you kind of talk on the radio, how you kind of talk with other people about what you produce? Are you still playing those instruments and like making music, or is it kind of turned into more of just on the radio?
Well, I'll start, Eden May, and I want to hear what you have to say about it too. But I'm not playing the trumpet anymore myself. Mm-hmm. I played professionally for 20 or 25 years, depending on how you want to put the starting line on it. But I played some great things, and I had a wonderful career as a trumpet player. But I also found, once I stopped playing as much, that to do any playing meant that I would be less of a player than I know I could be, if that makes any sense. So it turned into a sort of an exercise in frustration for me to pull out a trumpet. And I'm sure that I could, if I wanted to, spend 4 hours a day practicing again and getting back in shape and being that trumpet player that I was. But given that that wasn't a possibility in my life, I'm perfectly comfortable letting other people do the trumpet playing. And like I said, I produce our Boston Symphony broadcast, and so I hear amazing trumpet playing all the time, and those guys are incredible. So I kind of get the thrill from that. But in terms of that background and how it plays into what we do on the radio, there's a whole spectrum, and we have people at CRB with backgrounds in other areas that aren't as deep in classical music, but what they know how to do is connect with audiences. And that's one of the defining characteristics of CRB when you compare it to other ways of listening to classical music. You know, you can find classical music sources now more than ever, but generally they're streams, they're on-demand things or whatever. And what we have are people who bring this to you with a personality and very intentionally curate what they're doing. And there's some degree of classical music background that certainly helps in sort of programming and producing programs. But in terms of the hosting, we have people that don't have as deep a background in classical music, but they love it. They're always learning more about it. And mostly what they know is how to use their personality to invite people into that content. And that's sort of the core of what we do. We invite people into the music that we love, whether it comes from a love of deep lifelong involvement like myself, or for some of our other hosts, less of an involvement, but still a deep love of that content. So that's a maybe vague way of answering your question. I hope it's not too vague, but it is to say that there's a wide spectrum of how our different backgrounds play into what is in essence our main mission, mm-hmm. which is that invitation. What do you think, Eden May?
Well, like Brian, I find it very difficult to listen to some of the best musicians in the world doing what they do incredibly well and then pick up my bow and play. So I'm not really a cellist anymore. But yeah, I mean, I think what my musical background brings to hosting is that I'm just really excited about the music. I have played it, I know it intimately, and I really want other people to love it as much as I do. And I think that definitely affects how I host, what I have to say about the music, what I have to bring to the table. And when it comes to connecting to audiences, I know that music and I love that music. And so I'm bringing that energy into the show. So, yeah.
Yeah, it gets back to that invitation, right? And the enthusiasm and that sense of what I was describing at first is like, why aren't you more excited? You know, I would listen to places on a classical radio around different parts of the country, and, you know, you'd have someone come on the air and say, that was Telemann's Paris Quartet number 3. And it was just this whole, like, artifice of, like, importance and solemnity and all that. And I just think as a musician, music is just really fun. Yeah. And I think that's what Eden May does so well on the air. I'm just going to, sorry, Eden May, to put you on the spot here. But I mean, when you listen to her present something, whether it's one of the productions that she's done where we're bringing a concert to the air, or whether it's just in the middle of the day and Eden May has on something like, you know, Copland's Appalachian Spring, you hear what she's just said. You hear her love of this. And that's what we try to do at CRB. And that's kind of what excites me about doing this work.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's beautiful to hear. I feel like having that background in music brings so much more passion to what you're talking about. And I'd love to get into more of the specifics of the shows that you're broadcasting and hosting. Maybe Eden May, if you want to start, maybe talking a little bit more about kind of what that looks like of you hosting. Do you have a process behind picking the music that you want to broadcast or what you want to share on air?
Yeah, well, we actually have a very specific process behind what we play on the air. I am part of the programming team, so I do help pick the music, not every day, but I am programming a lot. And we have very specific parameters because we want to make sure that when someone turns on the radio at whatever they're doing at that time of day, it's the right piece of music. Mm-hmm. So things are very different from a sort of a morning drive show to a midday show to an evening show. And we like to think, what is someone doing at this exact moment? When they turn on the radio, what are they doing? Are they drinking their morning cup of coffee? Are they sitting down to work? Have they cracked open a book and they're reading? Are they at home taking care of the kids? Or, you know, the evening glass of wine? And we want to pick the right piece of music for that moment. So that's a big part of the thought process behind whatever we're chugging out during the day. But for my show in particular, middays is during the middle of the day, you're doing whatever you're going to be doing for the vast majority of that day, whether it's working or childcare. And so I'm just here to chill. We're playing long stretches of music and just hanging out and listening together, because this is the part of the day when you need to be concentrating on something. So I'm not trying to take attention away from whatever you're doing in your daily life. I am just a companion, and I'm going to be here with you while you do those things. So that's usually the thought process that is behind my show. And we have some fun segments. I do Today in Music History at 10:30, which is always a non-classical related music history nugget, because we like to talk about other genres too. And then I do a segment called Book Bag Lunch at Noon, where I talk about my other great love, which is literature. So, you know, there are some fun little tidbits in there, but for the most part, we're just hanging out.
And how long is the midday segment?
It's 9:30 to 2, so and a half hours.
Oh, nice. And then for Brian, I know you mentioned that you kind of oversee the broadcasting of Boston Symphony. Are those usually live performances? And then maybe if you want to explain a little bit more about what goes into that.
Sure. I'm happy to talk about that. And when it's time for me to stop, just feel free to raise your hand, because I could go on for a long time. But no, we are really, really privileged to work with the Boston Symphony on an incredibly close basis. The very first broadcast of anything from WGBH was a Boston Symphony concert. The station literally went on the air at Symphony Hall with a BSO concert, and it's a tradition that's remained there ever since. So we are live with the BSO. Every time that they're playing on a Saturday night, we are on the air with them, with very few exceptions. And we are also at Tanglewood, their summer home in the Berkshires, and we do live broadcasts on Friday and Saturday nights and Sunday afternoons. So when you add it all up, we are doing something in the area of, around 45 or so live broadcasts every year, and then because of the generous rights that the BSO offers us with how we use those broadcasts, we also have, when they're not playing on Saturday nights, we still have a Boston Symphony concert on that it maybe had previously aired. So in the end, it's year-round Saturday night Boston Symphony concert broadcasts, which is as close as any relationship in the country between a radio station and an orchestra. And to have one of the world's best orchestras be that orchestra is not just the sort of cherry on top, it is like the essence of what we feel is important. This is one of the marquee orchestras in the world. You know, any kind of, you know, subject, there's always subjective, but any kind of subjective top 10 list of orchestras is going to include the BSO. And so it's just completely our privilege to bring that to the air. Now, in terms of the broadcasts themselves and how they work, just to use a shorthand, I'll sort of say that it's almost like broadcasting a sports event. You know, unlike a sports event, we actually do know what's going to happen. The outcome is not really in doubt. There's very few things that go awry or go unexpected in a concert broadcast, but there nevertheless is a huge amount of spontaneity and a huge amount of in the moment sort of audience reaction and artist interpretation that makes those something distinct. You know, many times you can find a BSO program that we broadcast that will have a piece of music or several pieces of music that you could listen to on any number of streaming services, or if anybody's still using CDs, you know, you can rack up a CD or even an LP, right? You can find ways to play that music as a piece of music. You cannot find a way to hear it done in the moment at a particular point in the context of a program that has been carefully curated by the BSO to mean something. And that's what it's our privilege to be able to bring across. When I say that it's like a sports event, it's because we're not in control of the clock. In Eden May's show, she has total control of the clock. You know, she can make this book bag lunch do whatever it needs to do to serve the content and then move on. And she can adjust programming if for some reason things get a little behind. She can shorten a piece or selection or whatever. When it comes to live broadcasts of orchestras, we're at the mercy of how long it takes the stage crew to move a piano onto the stage, you know, and that's fine. That's actually, that gives us the chance to do a few minutes of radio in the middle of a concert. And, you know, then there are very special moments. Like last Saturday, there was an all Duke Ellington program that the BSO did. And there was this pianist, Gerald Clayton, who did a fantastic piece, New World of Coming by Ellington, which was great to hear. But what I will remember from that concert is his encore. That was in the area of the semi-unexpected. Like, I knew he was going to do an encore. I didn't know what it was going to be. And charmingly, he didn't tell me what it was going to be. He wouldn't tell me what it's going to be for. He wanted that to remain, which is totally fair. I told him, okay, fine, we'll work with it. We'll just go on the radio and, you know, we'll see what we can do. And he played this unbelievable version of America, the Beautiful, for his encore with... to coin a phrase, Ellingtonian harmonies, right? And weaving in a couple of other Ellington tunes into, I mean, the guy's a genius. And the moment of that being on the air is why we do live broadcasts of the BSO. And the audience just went nuts. They just could not get enough of it, right? And that's also exciting. So if you're listening to the radio, you couldn't get to the hall for whatever reason, or it just didn't fit into your schedule. But there we are on Saturday nights bringing you that, that sense of spontaneity and that excitement and that audience reaction. And that's really what I love about doing that particular work as part of our station. And then, as you said, yes, there are other productions that I coordinate that involve a little bit more sort of logistical planning and saying, Eden May, do you have next week to produce a show? And Eden May will say, no way. Let's work out something. But no, she actually always comes through with what we need in terms of productions. But that's a little bit more on the purely logistical side and a little bit of editorial in terms of how we shape broadcasts. We do broadcasts of a lot of other organizations and presenters around Boston. So Celebrity Series, Handel & Haydn Society, Boston Chamber Music Society, Boston Early Music Festival. Anybody who I left out, I'm sorry. There's just too many to name. But we pre-record those and produce those in the studio. And that's a lot of what Eden May does when she's not on the air hosting. She's producing. In fact, she will have next Sunday on the air the Boston Early Music Festival's opera from 2023. Eden May produced that broadcast, and it will be on the air so that we have Saturday BSO and Sunday lots of other stuff that isn't the BSO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you talked about like the spontaneity in that concert, and I actually had a couple of friends that went to that concert, and they talked about that encore for a very long time. It was an amazing show. And so I was just wondering, like, are there any shows or any like broadcasts that have just stuck with you, kind of like that one throughout the course of your career, that really just come to mind when you think about one of your favorite experiences?
Do you want to go, Eden May, or shall I just jump in?
I actually do have an answer for this.
Cool.
In March, I got to produce this really cool broadcast talking about Boston Early Music Festival.
Oh man, this was a highlight.
Yeah. So last year, the Boston Early Music Festival did a celebration of women, and it was a week of just incredible concerts, all celebrating women in early music, which there are more of them than you think. And I got to put together this show with two of my female colleagues, and it was an entire concert of Hildegard von Bingen with the Tiburtina Ensemble, which is an all-female choir. And if you don't know who Hildegard von Bingen is, she was a nun and a mystic who wrote some incredible music and also did a lot of writing. And she is sort of hailed now as one of the, you know, incredible female composers of her day. And then there was also, we sort of stuck it together with a broadcast of three incredible sopranos who had sort of gotten together to do this all Italian program. And to be able to produce that concert of just all incredible female artists singing the music of this incredible woman, Hildegard von Bingen, and to put it together with some of my colleagues who are just incredible at what they do, it was so much fun to make, and I'm still so proud of that broadcast.
So amazing.
It was an incredible broadcast, yeah, and the fact that the three of you worked on it together was amazing. Yeah. I mean, you had such a specific answer. Now I feel on the spot. There are so many highlights. That sounds like such a cop out of an answer, but
it's hard to choose.
It's hard to choose, and I think I would just say that a lot of the broadcasts that stick most clearly in my memory are from Tanglewood, which I don't know if you haven't been to Tanglewood. It is a place that's in the kind of in between Lenox and Stockbridge in the Berkshires, and it really is just an amazing place where things can happen that again gets to that spontaneity of music making, of audience reaction. I think when I think about memorable concerts, that always Film Night with John Williams is memorable. It just always is, partly because we usually end up having to improvise on the air for a little while because they're are 20,000 people trying to get into the Tanglewood grounds, and they have to delay the start of the concert, and we're on the air already, and they have to come around and say, we're not going on and for another 7 minutes, and so we're on we're doing live radio. It's like, well, let's rack up another piece of music so we can get those are kind of fun moments too, but mostly it's those moments that in the same way as that encore that you're describing, that your friend heard, that when you hear those over the radio, you kind of get chills, you kind of like you feel this connection. I mean, I don't want to get too philosophical here, but the fact is that there are so few places now in our time where thousands of people gather and do something together at the same time or experience something together at the same time. Sports remains kind of one of those things. But in our world of classical music, concerts remain something that bring people together. And our hope and our dream even is that people experience that kind of community over the airwaves, not just in whatever hall that we're broadcasting from.
Mm-hmm. Please get as philosophical as possible. I think we'd all really like that. I have a question. Did you want to go, Sophie?
No, please ask.
Okay. This, hopefully I'm not too long-winded when I try to like articulate this, but it's a real privilege to hear you both talk about how it just started getting me to think about how radio is a way for or what the intersection is between radio, broadcast, and classical music. You were talking about the history. It was fascinating. And then also like how people's first experience listening to classical music for a lot of people is on the radio. And I feel like you, Eden May, are probably a lot of people's first experience in that, being someone who curates the midday show. And you probably maybe even, I don't know if you like internalize that or whatever it is, but maybe could be like some kids' like first experience to classical music. So I was just wondering, like, if you could get philosophical or as much as you want to or not, about that intersection and the importance of classical music being on broadcast, on radio. I know you talked about the spontaneity of it, but there's just so much that goes into it. You've mentioned history, the act of doing it. I would love to hear more about it.
Well, we actually recently got a listener comment telling us that he plays WCRB for his preschoolers when it's nap time. So I'm just putting children to sleep these days. But when I think about my first experiences with classical music, I grew up listening to WCRB. And I also grew up watching the Barbie movies. Shout out to the Barbie movies. And I actually wrote an article about this a couple summers ago on gotoclassical.org. Little plug there. The music that I was listening to at that time was so connected to story and imagination. And I think that's a huge part of classical music that we sort of forget about as adults. So it's really fun to like bring a little bit of story or like whimsy, I would say, to the music when you're playing it. But yeah, that's the end of my thought, Brian.
Those are great thoughts, Eden May.
Thank you.
And you know, I'll tell you, I have raised kids, and when they were really, really young, I was that parent that Eden May is talking about, who would have our kids in the car and put on CRB, and you know, especially in an age, maybe you can all kind of appreciate that parents don't necessarily, parents might be very interested in the news, and then they turn on a news station and they realize my kids are in the car and this is not what I want them to be hearing right now. Not every time, but I mean, you know, news can be very scary. And if you have a 6 or 7 year old who has some level of sentience and ability to understand words from the radio, there's just news that you don't want them to encounter yet, you know, and we're a safe haven for that. So that's one specific kind of audience. And I think what Eden May also kind of alluded to is that when we're on the air, we feel like we're speaking to one person. We don't envision the thousands of people that are listening. If we did, we'd probably freak out. Our approach is to sort of imagine a person that we're with. And so when it comes to what you're asking about with classical music specifically on the air, you know, as someone who, like I said, I grew up in classical music. It was my profession for a long time. And so I just have memories and thoughts about sharing a piece of music with someone, you know, and it's almost always on a one-to-one basis, you know. I mean, I remember when I was at NEC and I had a friend, I was up, you know, third floor practicing somewhere, not really paying attention to very much except my own very narrowly focused world. And this friend of mine, also in my trumpet studio, kind of busted into the room and said, "You got to come down to Jordan Hall right now because so-and-so is conducting Beethoven 7. And so-and-so is playing first horn, you know?" And I'm like, okay. And I went down with him because he was so insistent. And it's like the horn part in Beethoven 7 is outrageous. It's so cool. And so it's, I would never have framed it myself in my mind that way necessarily, unless this friend of mine had said that to me. And so we're that friend, you know, we're that person who says, this is the thing about this music, you know, that we want to invite you to hear, not to teach them. We walk a very fine line here. And this is where any kind of a deep background like Eden May and I might have can sometimes be a little bit of a burden, because there are times when we could go on and on. Start me talking about Mahler sometime and all sense of good radio goes out the window, because I could say so much. And so what I have to do is and sort of pare down to the essence what I think someone will take into a piece of music that could remain with them as they listen, as just to let that music get into their system a little bit more. And, you know, overall, classical music on the radio as a thing, again, it has a special place to me because, A, there are the live concerts that I produce and host, but also on a broader scale, it gets back to everything Eden May said about curating programs to be the right thing at the right time. That's why a nationally syndicated classical music thing. I mean, you could turn on Sirius XM and they have classical stations, but they are in no way thinking about you and what you're doing in your life. We are thinking about what anybody happens to be doing in Boston, whether you're a student at BU or you're a mother with young kids or you're someone who is on the commuter rail going to their job. And that's different from any other way of hearing classical music. And that's why it remains important. And I think that's why listeners stay with us, if that kind of gets at what you were getting at.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much. Yeah. I think you really articulated like why the importance of classical music can, it can mean anything to adults, to kids. It has it's universal that it can touch anybody, or, you know, just be somebody's background music.
It can, that's okay too. That's all right too.
If there's something that I really want people to know about classical music, and I say this all the time and nobody believes me, classical music has something for everybody. Like, it really, really does, and it doesn't have to be serious. It can be so silly. Classical composers were very silly people, except maybe Beethoven. He was very serious. But
oh, no, he had a very silly side. Don't worry.
But I want people to know that there's something in classical music for you. Just come with us. We'll help you find it. I promise.
That's right.
The curation of music on the radio is something people who listen to streaming services like Spotify and Apple Music will never experience. Are there like any measures that the both of you are taking to kind of incentivize listeners to, instead of going to Spotify or Apple Music, to listen in at CRB or WGBH?
Maybe clarify what you mean by measures, like any
initiatives like talking to people. I'm not too sure.
Do you base off like the mood or like the weather maybe?
Yeah, yeah. Well, Eden May, maybe you can talk a little in a sec about how a host actually does make that connection. But I think one thing that I'll just drop in real quick is that we do more than just radio. I mean, we do events at our studio, and we've got a terrific relationship with the Boston Public Library. There is a string quartet in residence that we have, the Ulysses Quartet. They're based in New York, but they are in residence with us. So about 4 or 5 weeks out of the year, they come to Boston, and they go out and do school programs. They play free concerts. I think there's one this week on Thursday afternoon at the Boston Public Library, Central Library down at Copley Square. Mm-hmm. Anybody can show up at 1 o'clock and hear the Ulysses String Quartet, you know, do a performance. And then actually later that day, we've also got a jazz concert going on, because as GBH Music, we don't only do classical music. We have a whole jazz service at GBH. And we have events at our studio that sometimes are free, sometimes they're paid, but we invite people in that way. And that sort of brings a stronger connection to that personally curated way of looking at music. You know, this is our way of saying not just the music is great, but these particular connections within the music are great. So it just occurred to me that that's one way that we also try to build those connections. Maybe in terms of specifically on the air, what you're doing, Eden May, is good to address.
Yeah, I mean, well, I will say with what Brian does, you're not going to find a whole Boston Symphony Orchestra concert live just sitting on Spotify somewhere, you know? But when it comes to the day-to-day, I mean, what we're trying to bring is a personal and human touch to what we do. So I do talk about the weather, try to keep things local and give the show a sense of place. And so to talk about events that are going on in Boston, which is a great opportunity during my book bag lunch segment to uplift local bookstores and events that might be going on. Last week, I got to talk about the Boston Public Library book swaps that they do, which sounds super fun. But other than that, as Brian said earlier, we are talking to one person at a time, and we kind of... you're kind of thinking of what that one person is looking for in that moment, and it's companionship. I mean, we're keeping people company, and Spotify is not there to keep you company, and an AI generated playlist is not there to keep you company. We're here to hang out with you and to be a companion throughout the day, and also to lay out the music in a way that says, here's all this great music, and we're going to listen to it together. Our colleague Kathy Fuller says she likes to imagine that she's laying out a beautiful feast on a table and walking people through each of the dishes, which I think is a really wonderful way of looking at it. You know, you could come to a table and eat the food, but there's someone to tell you about it, and even like someone who made the food and designed the menu to tell you about it is going to add that extra special touch. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
These have all been such beautiful, thoughtful answers. Thank you so much. I think it's so clear to see that WCRB has amazing colleagues that are so passionate about the music that you're talking about and putting on air. I also grew up listening to WCRB. My mom would put it on in the morning with Laura Carlo.
Nice.
And I think, just wondering, I don't know if you have opinions on this, but maybe how, if you've noticed a change in the production of radio. I feel like in this day and age where maybe things aren't as spontaneous anymore and we have a lot more streaming and kind of instant gratification with kind of any type of media that we want to consume. And I was wondering maybe either through working in radio or just listening to the radio, if you've noticed any significant changes in that field.
Well, I think classical music is kind of the antithesis of like short form content in a huge way. And so is radio. I mean, I think public radio especially, you know, we're here for the long haul. We're playing these long pieces, these 20, 30 minute, sometimes 40 minute pieces. And it requires, I think, because we live in such an attention economy now, I think that what we do, we're not asking for people's attention. And that's huge because there are so many forms of media that are just clawing to get your attention and then keep your attention for as long as possible. And so in that way, I think it almost hasn't changed in that we are a place that where we're not gonna ask for your attention. And we are playing these long stretches of music that aren't necessarily instant gratification, but there's something gratifying in every moment of them.
That's a nice way to put it.
Too philosophical again.
it's okay. Yeah, I mean, the other thing about it is that even as what Eden May says is true, that we are aware of how people do use their time. I mean, I don't think that we necessarily think about ourselves narrowly competing with Sirius XM or streaming services as much as we are just competing with any way that anybody spends time. I mean, years ago, I remember trying Angry Birds for the first time on my phone and I realized, wait a minute, this is a way people can spend time when they're not listening to the radio. So this is something I should think about. But, you know, what we've done along with, you know, always paying attention to everything we've said about radio and how we craft radio and making those personal connections. We've also tried to make sure that we're in other places. We have been going through in the last few years, especially since the height of the pandemic, we, like so many other, you know, we don't even get into it, but we started doing, you know, video concerts at our studio, and the skills developed in that area kind of led us into a series of streamed video performances now that, like I said, many of them people can come to in the studio and be with us for in person. But that has led us into using YouTube, other video forms to make those connections so that we're kind of sending people back to CRB and that constant companionship. So I think there are plenty of things to say about the changes of technology, the changes of listener habits that we have to be very aware of. Sometimes responding with a particular new project or new perspective, and then also reinforcing what we know we do really well. And so it's kind of a constant attention to both of those things.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. We are coming a little bit to the end of our allotted time, but if anyone else has any final questions, please.
I actually wanted to know, is there a favorite classical, you know, music piece you guys want to put us on to?
Oh man. Well,
I'm sure there are many.
I mean, look, I'll just pull one out because there are so many like, we could stay for the rest of the day, but to just consolidate it down to, I'm just pulling this. It is one of my favorite pieces that I love to listen to anytime. And it is a long piece. It kind of gets to what Eden May was saying. It's not even one that we necessarily play during the middle of the day because it is so long. But if you listen to Mahler's Third Symphony, it is an incredible kind of journey from the most elemental sorts of earthy, instinctive, natural sorts of aesthetics through stages. This is literally what Mahler is doing, through stages of existence, of consciousness, until finally at the very end, it's this sort of connection with the divine that is elevated and transcendent. That's my 22nd introduction to Mahler's Third Symphony. But that is what I would say. If you want one piece of music to listen to, carve out about an hour and a half of your day and listen to Mahler's Third Symphony.
Noted.
I'm a big fan of Shostakovich, and his cello concertos are exceptional. And if I keep talking about them, I'll go on for way too long. But I would recommend them. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. You bet.
And thank you so much for coming onto the show and being here. We really appreciate you taking the time and really thinking through all of our questions and answering them so beautifully. We really enjoyed having you here, and thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a privilege.
It's been really fun. Thank you. Thanks.
Can I actually ask one final question?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It's fine with us.
We are here, like a school radio station, and I know that, Ida May, you mentioned that you got your start on a student radio. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure. But I was wondering, like, what your show was called, what you guys did. I was just curious.
That's a great question. So I worked for 90.5 WSMC in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I started by just hosting middays. I had a show called Lunchtime Requests, which was hectic, and I don't recommend this format, but we would take requests for an hour during lunchtime. And so I heard Chopin's Barcarolle about a million times, approximately. And so that was very fun. And then while I was there, I developed a very fun show called A Little Night Music, which was my ASMR evening show. And that was a really fun time. Yeah.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing, both of you, for sharing everything with us.
Yeah. Our pleasure.
Great.
It's been great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And we'll get back into some music.
Starting now.